through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration in 15 minutes. When do you anticipate the Seahawks will get a deal done with DK Metcalf? That's the first question. Four down territory. First, though, Mariners. Last summer, Jerry DePoto mentioned how he views the Mariners' timeline to be a contender and compared it to the Blue Jays, which is perfect given this series against the Blue Jays right now and how this series has gone. Mariners have a chance to avoid a sweep. They've obviously got a game today, first pitch at 4:07. But right now you're looking at two teams who both have started slow offensively, one team, though, with much more talent at the plate, and I think we're all assuming will probably fare better as the year goes on. But who knows? Lots of seasons still to play. That being said, though, I want to revisit this sound that was making the rounds yesterday. So Jerry DePoto, in July 1st, was on with our station and compared the Mariners' timeline to the Blue Jays.
I think that we've always viewed ourselves as about a year behind the Blue Jays, because roughly that's about when we started. And, you know, we have, similarly, when the Blue Jays started their rebuild, they did it with some premium prospects in the minor leagues, guys like Vlad and Bo Bichette and Kevin Biggio, et cetera. And they still have a couple that are on the way. Guys like Martin and Pearson, and they've done a really nice job of building up those layers, and we feel like that's happening for us too.
Now, by September and October, it certainly looked like the Mariners were close to being that. The Mariners finished 90-72, the Blue Jays 91-71. This year, Blue Jays off to a slower start considering all the talent they have, still obviously ahead of the Mariners. They're 20-17, Mariners 16-21, below 500, have slipped in the division. Were we assuming too much by thinking that when Jerry DePoto said that, we should expect the Mariners to be contenders in 2022?
You know, I believe that it is something that we all hoped that they could be, because obviously you look at the way that Jared Kelnick finished the season last year and you thought, oh my gosh, here he is. He's one of the best hitters in baseball right now, and obviously showing through on his talent and being a big reason why this team is finishing well down the stretch. You know that Julio Rodriguez is potentially coming up the very next year. Logan Gilbert's there for a year. You know George Kirby. So you see this crop of young talent that you've heard so much about through the farm system is finally going to come up to the big league level. But I honestly, right now, I have a hard time not coming to grips with the fact that maybe we are a year early on this timetable. If Jared Kelnick is not going to, you know, take the steps that he needs to take until, you know, the end of the season this year because he needs more plate appearances at the minor league level, then so be it. If it's, you know, the way that this young crop has come up, Julio obviously has been fantastic over the last, you know, 20 games. You know, I view this team, and I'm not sure that you could compare them anywhere near to the Blue Jays, because you had Vlad Guerrero, who was absolutely on track to be an MVP last year. Mm-hmm. Bo Bichette, right? I mean, you just look at you know, the young talent that they have on their roster and the way that they're producing. It's not just the talent. It's not just having those young players up. It is how they are producing for their team. And to me, that is the biggest difference when you talk about this roster and the young talent, how they brought them up, and what they've been able to get out of them.
I think the way I want to distinguish it, though, is were we overestimating how soon they could do it, or have they fallen short in meeting their own goals?
I think it overestimating how soon they could do it. I truly believe that in terms of look at the youngsters, Stacey.
Yeah.
How many youngsters in this lineup? I'm not talking about Logan Gilbert because he's been great. George Kirby, we'll see how he grows and progresses through the season. Obviously, you see the talent. But in regards to those young guys in this lineup, what have they done?
But that's what I'm saying. Did the Mariners put too much stock in those young guys making the leap?
Maybe. And I probably, just based off of the moves that they made, I mean, or did not make. I don't think Jesse Winker or Eugenio Suarez, just those two alone, make you a playoff team. It is Jesse Winker, Eugenio Suarez, Julio Rodriguez, Jared Kelnick taking the next step. It is these guys all taking the next step together in conjunction with those additions to your roster. And so maybe that is where you're falling short right now, is that these young guys are being put in positions that they're not quite ready for at this point in time. And, you know, I do agree that that easily could be the case here.
A point brought up by Lefko as we kind of look forward. Actually, before I get to that, I do want to add on that I think that it's a mix of our own expectations, but I also don't think that it is unfair in any way for Mariners fans who have watched their team miss the playoffs for a little over two decades to expect that the team contend. I don't think entering a season, your 21st season, heading into the possibility of no playoffs, it is in any way unfair to say, hey, let's go. Clock's ticking. Mm-hmm. I'm ready for this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, the last time the Mariners were in the playoffs, I was in middle school. I might have still been in sixth grade.
Yeah.
I am 47 years old now.
It is. Yeah. I mean, it's.
I'm not 47.
No, you're not. But it's always fun to think that you are. But I think that in this case, that's why the conversation about surrounding this young core with veterans, with a good, strong veteran core, is so incredibly important, right? That you are able to allow those guys to go through their growing pains, but also not having to overly rely on them, right? And they're at a stage right now where, unfortunately, they're relying on a lot of young guys, right? Abraham Toro, for example, is still a very young player in this league, although he's, you know, been up with the Astros.
But Abraham Toro was never supposed to be your big cornerstone. The young people that this team are supposed to rely on are Jared Kelnick, who was just demoted and sent back to AAA Tacoma.
Mm-hmm.
I can guarantee you that while the Mariners don't see that as punitive and want continued development from young players, that was not part of the plan. The idea would be, if you aren't going to go out and get those big name free agents, or if you aren't going to make big trades, that it's because those young players pan out for you.
Yeah, you're 100% right. I mean, you are right. But what do you do to supplement that? Do you just say, oh, it was a lost cause, or is it just truly overly expecting those guys to step up and take the next leap, and rather not having a better fallback plan?
I think what you do to supplement it is, if you are getting players who are turning you down because they don't want to come to Seattle, which is understandable given the travel miles, given its reputation of, no offense, Seattle fans, losing, right? I can see why a superstar would be like, I don't want to come here. If you're throwing money at them and they're not willing to take it, or if in a trade a team is only willing to say Julio and who else, and you say, man, nothing, because I'm not giving you Julio. If your hands are tied in that way, then I see nothing wrong with getting a veteran bat that may not be blowing people away, but would be something. Nelson Cruz.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I know he's not great right now. He's not great, but Nelson Cruz hitting 188 or so would still be better than one or two guys in your lineup right now.
Well, because there's also the expectation that he would turn it around, right? That there is a far greater likelihood that he figures it out and turns things around, and that you have hope and optimism that that is going to be the case, versus someone who is a young player who's struggling through, you know, a lot of their growing pains, and you're wondering, if they are going to realize their talent or not, right? I mean, there's a big difference in that. So I know, and I agree with you, last year it was Colton Wong. You didn't need to spend a crazy amount of money for somebody like Colton Wong. Kyle Schwarber, a year ago for the Boston Red Sox, the Red Sox didn't spend a ton of money for him.
That was a little bit of the Kevin Mather situation, which you've now moved on from. Kevin Mather made it clear that he was not willing to spend that money. He wanted to be able to recoup as much money as possible, right? A business move following a year in which the league and teams were hit hard by COVID.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what fans wanted to see, but that's what Kevin Mather, a business person, wanted to do. With him out of the picture, it's hard to pin that on someone like DePoto, but
no,
you also haven't taken a big step forward.
No, you haven't. But that's what I mean, though, is how are you going to supplement it? So, yeah, if you're not able to land star talent, you go and trade for Eugenio Suarez and Jesse Winker. You're obviously still banking on Mitch Haniger being healthy, and that would be a big difference for this team. Even if Mitch was healthy, it would not be as bad as it is right now.
Sure.
So I understand from Jerry DePoto's perspective, listening to this conversation, going, yeah, it hasn't worked out the way we thought it would, but also, from a health perspective, we have not been in the best situation here. You know, look at our bullpen. Look at what has transpired there as well. but I think that that is the reason why it is better to be more aggressive in getting established depth pieces to be able to supplement some of the fallout of injuries and everything else that could occur, rather than turning to Abraham Toro or Cal Raleigh or these guys that are very much struggling at the plate, or you're left having to call up Mike Ford and Steven Souza Jr. Like, these are not the positions that you want to be in. This is not the makings of a team that is going to have great run and great success in the playoffs, right? Like, it's just something that puts you in a very difficult position.
I think that it is fair for fans to have expected and expect that the Mariners were going to contend. When I say contend, I mean get back to the playoffs. I don't mean contend for a World Series. So I got to first make that definition clear. I think it was fair for fans and is fair for fans to expect that the Mariners be a playoff team this year. Mm-hmm. That Jerry DePoto, it's not your first year. I know you have more control this year over baseball ops than you've ever had before, but it is not your first year here in Seattle. You've had many years here in Seattle, and this team has never touched the playoffs. They came really close last year, so you knew the moves you needed to make to get better. Now, if fans are looking at it saying, I've been told it was this year and I'm ready for this year, I'm not holding that against you at all. In fact, I'm right there with you. There are some fans, though, that are saying, you know what, as frustrating as it sounds, 2023 and 2024 are more realistic options. You could look at the Blue Jays, where Vlad Guerrero's in his fourth season, Bo Bichette's in his fourth season.
Yes.
Compared to the Mariners, where Jared Kelnick's in his second season, Julio's in his first season. But then...
That's how I see it.
Sure, and that's how you see it. All I caution is that we don't keep moving that ball down the road. That we don't keep moving the goalpost. Pardon the mixed sports analogies there. I do not want in 2023 for us to say, you know what, it was always about 2024. In 2024, you know what, it was always about 2025.
Right.
2025, we're now pushing in on 26 years removed from the play. You know what, it was always about 2026.
Mm-hmm.
You know what, we were always going to play the World Series in this baseball, but we all knew that that would happen.
And the difference between all of that, when you talk about moving the ball down the road or moving the goalposts, okay, so let's look at the Toronto Blue Jays, how they constructed their roster. It was not just waiting for Vlad Guerrero Jr. to pop and Bo Bichette to pop, and those two things were incredibly important for them to have that happen. But all of the other veteran players that they went out to get, George Springer.
Got you 3 RBI yesterday.
Matt Chapman.
Yep.
I mean, you go down the list of these other veteran players that they've surrounded those two talented guys with, and you know, their pitching staff, right? Kevin Gausman, Jose Berrios. I mean, they have been able to be very aggressive in surrounding these star players with other talent, not just veteran guys that have done it before, but guys that are still in their prime doing it at a very high level. And that's what the Mariners have to be able to do as they're moving forward. But right now, they got to hope that Mitch can come back healthy, that Kyle Lewis can come up and remain healthy with this team, and that Jesse Winker can come up and produce runs.
That is the interesting...
That, to me, is the biggest thing that has to happen.
That is the interesting crossroads that this team is at, like we talked about earlier. You've got Jared Kelnick, Kyle Lewis down with the AAA team. You've got Mitch Haniger, who's injured. Assuming that you get a lot of these guys back, do you look like a different team? Do you start pushing for the playoffs? We don't know the answer yet. So if you want a reason to be optimistic and look at a silver lining and be glass half full, it's there.
Mm-hmm.
We're just going to have to get a little further into the season to see how it goes. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First down, Jake, when do you anticipate the Seahawks will get a deal done with DK Metcalf?
Well, there is a lot of urgency when it comes to getting this deal done with DK. And cut number 8, I mean, this was post-draft. This was Pete Carroll, John Schneider, post-draft, supposed to be talking about the draft, and here's Pete Carroll talking about DK Metcalf.
It's really important for us. We'll kick it into John's court, you know, here in the weeks to come here after the draft and all.
But, we'll get to the draft.
Yeah. But we're really communicating great, and DK is, we've been on a great wavelength to move forward, and hopefully this will all work out, and we don't plan on him going anywhere else. We want him to be with us.
based off of the rhetoric and the urgency that we have heard from Pete Carroll, John Schneider, and DK Metcalf, it has been very different than from the conversations that we've heard about with Russell Wilson, with Jamal Adams, with Bobby Wagner. To me, I would be very surprised if this deal does not get done before the end of mandatory minicamp. So that would be what, the middle of June? 18th? Mm-hmm. 16th? Something in that time frame?
Yep.
I'd be very surprised if they don't get a deal done. And the reason why I say that is because I think that they would like to have this wrapped up, buttoned up, before, you know, everyone goes off for vacation for a month and then they come back for training camp. You don't want this to bleed into training camp. You want to have DK Metcalf signed, sealed, delivered, and feeling good and everybody on the same page as DK Metcalf is then going to then turn and practice. And you don't want to put him in a position where he has to sit there and say, all right, am I going to show up and hold in like Quandre Diggs, Dwayne Brown, Jamal Adams did last year and not practice while I don't have my deal done? Or is my deal going to be done before training camp and I'm going to show up from day one and be ready to roll?
Let's make a bet.
That's important. That's really important with two new quarterbacks.
Let's make a bet. DK Metcalf, deal gets done in June. I'll bring donuts into the office.
Okay.
Deal gets done by August 2nd. Between the end of that mini camp and August 2nd.
All right.
Then you bring donuts in for the office.
Deal.
Great.
Deal.
Second down.
The real winner is the office.
The office. Making no bet at all. Second down. What does the signing of cornerback James Bradbury mean and affect the dynamic in the AFC East?
Well, what it does is I think that when you're talking about the NFC East, I think that the Philadelphia Eagles have put themselves in a position to really be the contenders. And I know the Dallas Cowboys had an amazing year last year. They got a very talented roster, but I really like what the Eagles have done so far this offseason. They have really addressed a lot of the issues and have upgraded the talent around Jalen Hurts. And I think that when you're talking about defensively, this group has gotten significantly better. So I'm really excited about what the Eagles can do this year. I think that they've got a great chance to contend and compete within the NFC East. And that is a division that always seems to be like they are the bottom of the divisions every single year. But I think the NFC East is going to be very, very competitive with some good teams in it this year.
And the NFC East, what did we also learn? The easiest schedule of any of the teams.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as Curtis would say if he was here, that classic East Coast bias, and also the South in the case of Dallas. Third down. What change to the Seahawks defense are you the most excited to watch this season?
Well, go to cut number three here, and Clint Hurt talking about the differences in this defensive philosophy from a pass defensive perspective. You'll like what you hear.
You have two different principles when you play zone coverage in this league. Some teams are spot drops where you really focus on hitting landmarks, and you know, and you, once you get to your depth, got your vision on the quarterback and you're melting and moving off the eyes of the quarterback and reading the shoulders and whatnot, where he's going with the football, and then you got to break and react on the ball. You know, and the other side you can play is more of a zone matchup principle where you're really playing bodies and pattern matching more so than playing in an area. So are you playing a man or are you playing the area? There's a difference. So you have either zone match or you have spot drop vision and break. And we've been a vision and break defense here for a really long time. And we'll have some of those principles in certain calls that'll stay alive. But the big thing right now is obviously the ability to pattern match, and you got to be able to react to the stems of receivers and whatnot and match up with people.
So defensively, they are trying to be more aggressive in their coverage, not by necessarily sitting there and saying we're going to play man-to-man coverage every time, or our safeties are going to be, you know, crowding more towards the line of scrimmage. That's not necessarily the case. But the underneath coverage is not going to be sitting back with their eyes to the quarterback. They are going to be looking up receivers and tight ends and running backs that are going to be in routes. And what does that do? It forces the windows to shrink in coverage. Now, it also puts guys in situations where they have to be in more man-to-man situations, and they have to be ready for that challenge. But that's why I think that there was a desire to get younger, to get more explosive defensively, so that they could play more of these match principles and not leave anybody on an island that they felt like could get exposed potentially. So I really like this change and this different attitude philosophically, defensively, and I do believe it'll put them in the best position, because over the last couple of years, Stacey, they've really been at the mercy of other offenses. Let's see if the offense can execute their game plan. Well, guess what? They've shown that they could execute their game plans at a very high level. And the last 2 years, the first halves of those seasons have been some of the worst defensive performances that we have seen in NFL history from a pass defensive perspective. They are not going to sit back and let that happen again, and that is something that I really, really appreciate and like about Clint Hurt.
From the 206, you need a donut endorsement. You know what? For how frequently this show talks about donuts,
amen.
Top Pot Donuts, which I get, we make a number of sports
bets.
Way
to casually work that in there.
Top Pot Donuts, if you're listening, we make a number of sports bets. And every time that
any other donut vendor that wants to step up to the table,
we will talk about you instead. Every time I lose, inevitably it's me losing, I bring donuts in and everyone wins. Curtis never has to bring donuts in. He's just the beneficiary of our bets. One day, though, I'm going to get Jake. One day Jake is going to have to bring in the donuts. But
the real reason,
if you're listening, I talk about you all the time.
Or any other local donut shop. I'm very open.
I am available for sale to endorse any donut.
We are free agents, okay?
No loyalty.
But if you commit to us, we will commit to you.
That's exactly right. Fourth down. All right, coming up in the timeline, I'm going to go over some irrational fears and scary moments that were submitted to us when we talked about the possum climbing into the media booth at OCO. So, Jake, for your fourth down, which is always a weird question, the scariest thing to ever happen to you?
The scariest thing to ever happen to you,
because we got some creepy crawly moments from listeners that I'm going to get to in the timeline.
Oh, man. I think the scariest thing that ever happened to me.
The deer is a big one.
That takes the cake. That takes the cake.
Jake
the scariest,
murdered.
No, I did not. I was driving down the freeway.
Animal.
Driving down the freeway.
How fast were you driving?
The speed limit.
Jake.
The speed limit.
Jake.
100%.
Jake.
Stacey, don't.
Jake.
Bring
just,
on your
was
casual
there, Jake,
10 over.
Was there eight in front of it?
Just no, like. There was not. But the deer came out of the freeway and I hit it. You know, traveling at the speed of the freeway. And
it
wrecked my car.
Yeah, it did.
Absolutely wrecked my car. And I'm in the middle lane of the freeway. Luckily, there was no one else on the freeway. I was driving down to our cabin down there in near Vancouver, Washington. And, oh, man, I was swerving in both lanes. Eventually was able to get to the other side. But, yeah, that was scary.
All right, we have a packed timeline coming your way. We've got a weird MLB record that was matched yesterday. Some good news from U.S. soccer. We've got an MLB suspension. We've got some continuing bad news for an NHL team that just continues to get more and more pathetic. Also, though, I got to count down from five the scariest stories that were sent in to us to do with those creepy, crawly, irrational fears. It's all coming your way next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Jake and Stacey. Before I get to some of these weird sports stories, we've got some weird, weird stories. A lot of you guys sent this in earlier when we were talking during Headline Rewrites about a possum that climbed into the Oakland Coliseum media booth. I've been advised not to call it OCO because no one in Cali calls it OCO, and now someone's going to tell me no one in Cali says Cali. So it's a chain reaction I'm trying to start here, which is horrifying. It climbed in from the ceiling, popped its head in, and the media booth had to be evacuated. So we asked people, hey, you know, the three of us, me, Jake, and Lefko, couldn't think of any big moments that, you know, were horrifying or scary. I think there was like a bat that flew into a hotel room once where I was at when I was a kid, but I don't really remember it, so it doesn't count.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but listeners delivered. They delivered.
Yes, they did.
So I'm going to get to what I feel is the worst one last, and instead I'm going to start with what I thought was a very funny one. As far as creepy, crawly, scary moments go, a 300-pound black bear out in fishing camp walked out onto the deck of the cabin, was about 6 feet away. I slowly walked back in and closed the door, but the bear then came onto the porch. With mostly people older than I, they all felt that since I was the youngest, I should chase it away. I countered with, you're the oldest and have lived a great life. I have so much more to experience. Well, I found myself with a wooden spoon in a pot chasing it out of the camp.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's no way that went over well. That's hilarious. And being in that position where you don't want anything to do with it, yeah, no thank you. There is one story here. There is one story.
Would you say it's worse than that?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
but wait. It feeds into
is
my greatest fear. It is my greatest
Don't
fear.
Don't read this one yet.
Or being in a position, no, being in a position that I hate.
Sure.
When it comes to being in a marriage,
let's
which
call
is
it number four.
Number four. Okay. Kelly from the 425. My wife and I lived in Mexico. When my wife woke up, she put on her shoe and on her finger was a scorpion that was raising its black tail. She flung the scorpion in our room.
Nope.
And would not return to the house until I found it. I found it later under the covers in the bed with a black light. Being in that position where you have to put on a brave face and the entire time you are shaking with fear, looking for something, right? Whether it's a scorpion in Kelly's case or a giant spider, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
You are in that position. You've got to get it done. There's no try. It is do or do not. And for Kelly, congratulations to you for eventually finding the scorpion and getting it out. But that is a position that's like, man, that's rough. That's rough. But you got to do it. You got to do it.
All right. Let's go number three. This one from Joseph in Tacoma. In 2006, I was in Iraq and I was on my way back from a shower one evening. So I can only imagine you're like, I'm maybe not fully prepared to get into a fight of any kind. I stumbled across a camel spider. If you guys don't know what this is, I'm going to go ahead and say, Jake, how big would you say they are? Because you looked
giant.
About a foot.
Yeah, they
are 12 inches.
They can
or
grow
more.
To be massive.
Its body was bigger than my fist.
Oh.
I stopped, he stopped, and we squared off. I was fully prepared to use all 30 rounds of my M4 if necessary.
And it would be all well spent. Yes. I mean, oh my gosh, that is. We were talking about this during the break, and Taylor, you had said that you had Taylor Jacobs, that he had taken a trip out to Israel and had dealt with camel spiders and being advised of, you know, making sure to check your boots and all that. But seeing them jump out from the sand, like, no, thank you. I would have said, I'm good. Whatever tour I'm on, I'm going to turn right back around right now.
All right. I've got I'm cheating. I've got three tied for number two. I'll go quick. Three tied for number two. I couldn't decide which of these three were worse, but then I did decide that another fourth story was worse than any of the ones I just read. So I'm saving that for number one. So quickly through these three. Ziplining in Canada. Fun, right? Ziplining. It's always a great time. Only the problem is a bear dropped out of a tree in front of me while walking on a suspension bridge. A bear dropped out of a tree in front of me. While walking on a suspension bridge. Next one here from the 253.
I mean, what do you even do in that
also
moment?
Also tied for number two, my cousin dove into a lake and straight into a water moccasin's nest.
Oh, my gosh.
That one's horrifying.
How do you live? Did it die?
Did
your cousin die?
How
do you live after that?
Also tied for number two, my mom was rafting once in Florida. She jumped into the water, and then after a couple minutes, she felt some tickling sensation on her shin.
Oh,
she scraped at it, wondering what it was, but it wouldn't go away. She lifted her leg, and she saw leeches.
Oh.
A leech attached to her leg. She and the rest of the girls went hysterical trying to get back into the raft. A leech. No one likes a leech. All right, let's get to number one. This one has a twist.
Okay.
Twist ending. Get ready for it.
All right. I think I'm ready. I literally have chills all through my body just reading these stories. I don't like this segment.
Just wait for this one. This one has a twist at the end. My grandfather back home in Puerto Rico was a sugarcane worker. He biked to work with his machete. Yep, kind of reckless. On his way back to work at 5 a.m.,
mm-hmm.
he got bitten by a centipede that was inside of his boot. But wait, he fell off his bike. And the machete cut two fingers off his
hand. No!
That's the worst one.
Oh,
the worst one has nothing to do with the animal or the insect itself. You cut two fingers off your hand on accident.
Oh, my
Because a centipede
gosh.
Bit your foot.
Well, and the centipede, okay, I've learned this with Jackson, who's obsessed with, like, animals right now. So we watch a lot of animal shows. And a centipede bite is one of the worst bites you can experience.
Yay.
So the venom and everything is not good. So you dealt with that, and you're dealing with two cut-off fingers at the same time?
Yes.
At the same time?
I know.
Oh.
All right, the creepy crawly stories, gross kind much. Of animal encounters, we called them, much like the Oakland A's reporters and Twins reporters got to see. Now suddenly the Twins and A's reporters dealing with a nice little friendly possum climbing into the press box doesn't seem so bad compared to this poor man who cut two fingers off with a machete.
Unless it has rabies, though.
Unless it has rabies.
This all
right.
got started. This
rate.
All got started because we kept talking about irrational fears that we have, and then people started tweeting or texting us stories, just feeding our irrational fears even more. So thank you for that.
Let me run through the remainder of our stories here. Got to be quick. The Astros hit 5 home runs in the second inning. Second inning, 1 inning, 5 home runs. That ties an MLB record for most home runs in a single inning.
Wow. That is crazy.
I know. Just along weird news notes, know that that was probably the weirdest story from MLB yesterday. Also, good news in U.S. soccer. U.S. soccer announced a new CBA with the men's and women's national teams. Both teams will now get an equal split of all World Cup bonuses. If you were wondering what the discrepancy was like before, according to ESPN soccer writer Jeff Carlisle, during the last World Cup cycle, the last place men's team received more bonus money than the first place women's team.
You know, this is something that I think that when you're talking about, you know, fairness and everything else, it really stems from the fact that, you know, this came to light when you have a men's soccer league that is making, or the U.S. men's soccer team is making more, yet the women's soccer team was far more successful. Right.
So I think some people will point, they'll be like, what about the revenue in the league? That's not. Yeah. Necessarily the case here. This is just a discrepancy that hasn't been addressed.
Yeah, and so I think that is something that really, you know, is the right call by you know, the U.S. soccer team, and you know, something that I think makes way more sense to me when it comes to the U.S. soccer team than, you know, being able to individually go and make your own money when you're playing for, you know, premier teams, MLS teams, everything else, when you're representing your country. You know, should there be that big of a discrepancy in pay? I don't know. I don't think so.
Good on U.S. soccer. Last story here in the timeline. If you thought the Kraken were down bad after a tough inaugural season, well, it gets worse for the Arizona Coyotes. They will not have a center ice logo. According to The Athletic, the Coyotes, who will be playing at ASU, cannot modify the center ice logo as part of that agreement, meaning a professional NHL team will be playing over the Arizona State logo instead of their own.
I mean, it just when you think it's just they hit a new low, they find a way to get to an even lower moment, right? Like, it's embarrassing. You're a professional NHL hockey team, and you cannot put your own logo on the ice. I mean, oh, man, they are such a clown show. They are a clown show. I don't know how else to describe them. Absolute circus. And honestly, it's embarrassing for the NHL.
All right, listeners, welcome to join back in for this next debate we're going to have. What is objectively better? While we're talking about the Mariners here, speaking of, and a tough start on offense for a number of teams, would you rather have bad pitching and a great offense or great pitching and a bad offense? That's next.
Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
Paul Sewald going to join us in 15 minutes. Before we get to that, a question about pitching. Speaking of pitching, what is objectively better? Bad pitching with great offense or great pitching and bad offense, because that's kind of where the Mariners have found themselves at recently, Jay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is. And I will give you my emotional reaction
sure. And
the answer that is
the
real.
Pragmatic.
Okay, the pragmatic one. Yes, very, very well put. My emotional reaction is I want a dang good lineup, okay? I want homers. I want runs. I want to put up a lot of runs, and I want a great offense, and it's something that we haven't had here in Seattle for quite some time. So the emotional part of me, if you ask me that question, is to say, Stacy, it's all about the runs. It's all about this lineup. If you're talking to the pragmatic version of me, I would say, well, your lineup can turn around, especially when it comes to the summer months and in May and June, and things can heat up for your players. It is better to have great starting pitching, and that can keep you in games and can keep it in a range where you are never truly out of it. Mm-hmm. That to me is more realistic. That is what you truly want, and then hope that your bats can come around. And that, to me, unfortunately, is exactly where you are at with the Mariners for the most part, outside of, you know, a couple bad starts from, you know, or a couple bad innings from Robbie Ray and a couple bad starts from Marco Gonzalez. You know, it's been a lot of solid pitching from your rotation to the lineup just not producing the runs that you need and it being incredibly frustrating.
I think when you're looking at thinking one can improve over the other, why does it feel like offense can turn around more quickly or more effectively than can pitching? Is it because it feels like offense is a little more random, whereas
Yes, and that guys can get on a hot streak. Like, look at J.P. Crawford last year, right? J.P. Crawford did not show up until, like, basically he didn't show up until June.
May, yeah.
Honestly, it was June. June, all of a sudden, J.P. Crawford gets on a hot streak, and he becomes a dude. I mean, he becomes a guy that not only was he a great, you know, gold glove type of shortstop, but also somebody that's getting it done with the bat. And I was at the first game where, you know, the crowd is chanting JP's name and JP comes through the clutch RBI hit that helps the team win. I mean, those are the moments that you're looking for and wanting, right? JP delivered that. And so it was addition to what you had going on with Seager, Mitch Haniger, Ty France, and then you added JP Crawford to the mix and it really helped this group out. Well, now what you're looking at is you're really hoping that that person is going to be Jesse Winker to match what Ty France and J.P. Crawford are doing right now, what Julio Rodriguez is currently doing right now. You need Jesse Winker to you know, help supply that. You need Adam Frazier to be more consistent. He's been solid. He's been fine. He's had some really good games for you, but I'd just love to see more consistency out of your leadoff hitter. And to me, those are the things that you're looking for, because I do think that you can have your lineup go into a hot streak a lot easier than it is for, you know, bad pitching to all of a sudden turn good.
One listener says, I know we're going to lose either way. If I know we're going to lose either way, I'll take bad pitching with a great offense. At least it's entertaining. Another listener says, you don't win without good pitching.
Correct.
What do we do?
We're in a problem, right? But I would say
you're
that
what they say, the experts call a pickle.
Yeah. But you have to have great pitching.
Yeah.
You have to have great pitching. And yes, is it just painful to watch a game that is 2-0, 3-0?
Yes.
Oh, yes. I mean, it is so painful. But you are in a position to win throughout the entire game. Throughout the entire game. And that to me is a position that I feel more comfortable with this lineup being in this position right now, because I have more optimism that this lineup is going to get turned around. My only fear, to be honest with you, is that this lineup, it's a little too late. That's what I'm worried about for this season.
Too late in the season?
Yeah, too late in the season, or that the Angels and the Astros, I mean, they've already begun to take off, right? And if the Angels and the Astros remain consistent with their level of play, it's going to be tough. And the 3-6-0, I think it's way too early to panic. No one's panicking. We're talking about problems. We're talking about issues. We're thinking critically about what's going on right now. I can't stand that. Oh, we can't talk critically about the team because it's too early. No, we can. Okay? And we're going to talk about it. And I think that when you're looking at this team, the reality is that if the Angels and the Astros are able to stay on track, doesn't mean that they're not going to have downturns, but if they're able to stay on track with what they're doing right now, they're going to make the playoffs and you're going to be the one sitting out of the dance. Mm-hmm. And my greatest fear is that this offense does not get going, you know, in the next couple weeks. And now you're in a tough spot, a really, really tough spot.
Most common sentiment on the Mac and Jack's text line right now, ask Felix what he would rather have. You're right. You had great pitching. You had a Cy Young winner with little to no support cast around him consistently. And we all know what that got, which was zero trips to the playoffs.
Ask Mike Trout.
I could turn
this around right on you.
I think that, yes, ultimately the very best teams will have both. You're going to have great offense. You're going to be able to score runs, the name of the game, but you're also going to have great pitching. And I would argue that the very best World Series teams are the ones, or that do so most consistently, are the ones with at least two top-flight pitchers. It's a
It's an interesting question because, unfortunately, the Mariners are not finding themselves very well balanced right now. We'll see whether that offense, like you said, Jake, can continue to develop. If you do just say, like, look, the pitching is great, I'm okay with that. If the bullpen can stay consistent and if that offense can catch up, if Kyle Lewis is surprising, if Mitch Haniger comes back sooner than expected, if you just get enough, then maybe that'll be okay to try to contend with some of those teams in the AL West. We're going to bring on Paul Sewald. We're going to get back to this conversation, take a look around the NFL, all that stuff, all coming your way next, but we're going to start with Paul Sewald. Don't go anywhere.